I'd like to apologize to everybody out there who listens to yesterday's podcast and was wondering, during all of our insightful, amazing discussion about Dave Hackstall and all the stuff that happened yesterday, and really kind of bring in the thunder, I thought, on the conversation. We didn't talk about the IIHF World Championship victory by Canada over Russia, but there's a reason for that, and I don't think that people know about it, Jeffy.
Well, is that which because is that, you hate Canada? We know that, Greg.
Well, I mean, I do hate
podcast here.
I think hate's a strong word. I mean, I think
dislike for Canada.
Actively root and cheer for their demise is not hate. But you have to remember that the IIHF World Championships are, in fact, a TSN product, which is why you never hear us talk about Aaron Ward or James Duffy or Cabby Presents or Bar Down, although we do talk about Puck Daddy, so essentially we talk about Bar Down. But we do throw
light.
Shade. We throw shade sometimes. I'm gonna Jeff Merrick, open your ears for a second, because I'm gonna name some things, and you tell me how many of these things it takes before you know who I'm talking about.
Okay.
He thinks the original Star Wars are episodes 1 to 3. His name, according to Drew B, is an anagram of Jostle New York Horn. Dave Loza writes in, he's actually made of pure lightning, and that's why the team even looked at him. Jason Rogers says his nickname, his friends call him TJ. Any thoughts yet?
Yeah, it's the little squirt on Tampa.
Maybe this will jog your memory. Sean Gentile of the Sporting News site writes in and says he's actually very tall. Do you have it now?
In the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. Of course you're talking about Tyler Johnson. I bet I have something that you don't know about Tyler Johnson. Or maybe you do. I don't know how closely you're paying attention to the junior game.
Well, I would love, Jeff Merrick, for the first time on this podcast, if you would just go ahead and reveal your Johnson facts.
Okay, well, let's just unzip here. Let's see if I can get you around to answering this question. He once worked for someone who's in Cooperstown.
Ooh. Really?
Yeah.
He once worked for someone who... And now, when you say in Cooperstown, can I just get the clarification that you mean the Baseball Hall of Fame?
Baseball Hall of Fame, yeah.
All right. So he once worked for...
Players the Baseball Hall of Fame. He's got to be in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. You don't know if he's in the Baseball... You don't know if he's in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
I can do a quick... Hang on. Let me do a quick check here.
Hang on. You don't know if he's in the Baseball Hall of Fame. Tyler Johnson grew up in Spokane, Washington. So I will go ahead and say that he once worked for Ken Griffey Jr.
No.
Okay. Harold Reynolds?
Yeah, I think he's this guy's in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, wait. What year was he in the Hall of Fame?
No, I can tell you that. You can do a quick little... wait for the plug, Yahoo search, and find that out. I've left enough Hansel and Gretel crumbs here for you.
Hey, hold on. Tyler Johnson, Baseball Hall of Fame. Is it George Steinbrenner?
Close.
Who is it?
George Brett.
Oh, man. What did he do for George Brett? Was he a bat with pine tar on it?
I was gonna say, yeah, he was the one that concocted the pine tar brew in the back of the dugout for George Brett. No, George Brett was it was a couple of other people too. I'm not sure if he was the primary owner or he's just a minority owner, but he used to own the Spokane Chiefs of the Western Hockey
League. Did he really?
Yes. Wow. Yeah, I talked to him once when his Chiefs won the Memorial Cup, and this is when I was doing Hockey Night in Canada radio. This would have been 2008, I guess. Yeah, had a delightful conversation with George Brett about junior hockey, which is one of the most surreal things I've ever had. Never in my life, because I grew up a huge George Brett fan. Much to the chagrin of the Toronto Blue Jays, I was actually like a pretty big Kansas City Royals fan. In that George Brett era. I love George Brett, and getting a chance to talk to him was kind of a real trip for me. I don't get starred out by people, but talking to George Brett was about junior hockey of all things. Just like one of those surreal moments in your life where halfway through it you realize, I'm so glad that every day I woke up, I was alive. Every day that I made the decision when I went to bed, okay, it's a good day because I decided to stay alive. Because honestly, folks, if you only just stay alive, you'll see some freaky stuff. And some weird stuff will happen to you. And moments like talking to George Brett about junior hockey on a show called Hockey Night in Canada Radio. Actually happened to me. And I'm sure weird stuff will happen to you. Essentially, the lesson here is just stay alive. At the end of the day, it's your job to make sure you're
alive. I believe it was Daniel Day-Lewis in Last of the Mohegans who said, stay alive no matter what occurs. I think that's life advice, too. Also, he said in There Will Be Blood, I drink your milkshake. Drink it up. Which is also life advice. Tyler Johnson last night had an amazing game. Obviously, the hat trick, played extraordinarily well. That kick pass to Stamkos where he checked Mark Stahl.
Beautiful.
Lost his stick, checked Mark Stahl, took the puck and kick passed it over to Stamkos for a chance was ridiculous. What a pace setter. What a catalyst. I mean, you know, Stamkos said something effective last night. They always talk about the line that he's on, but Tyler Johnson was the man, you know, basically last night doing it all on his own. And just an amazing. They win 6-2, tying the series 1-1, and Tyler Johnson now running away with the goal lead in the playoffs.
Before we get to that, can I talk about the other narrative of Tyler Johnson? Because we're always focusing on, you know, this inspirational guy. He was an overage player, never drafted in the NHL, undersized, undernourished, would never make it. And despite all odds, he did. And everyone loves to tell the story, and coaches will always tell you, you know, even though, you know, you may seem like you're at the end of your rope in hockey, hang on, believe in your dream and all that. I can't.
Oh, hold on. May I guess? May I guess, please? Listen, I think Jake Rudolph guessed it. Our question today, of course, is tell us a Tyler Johnson thing that we don't know. He said that he is secretly a hobbit and is searching for the one ring to rule them all, and he thinks it's hidden inside the net. And that's why he keeps going to it. Is that true?
Well, close. But here's the actual Tyler Johnson story. Because, as we know, Tampa is playing the New York Rangers. And who's not playing for the New York Rangers is Matt Zuccarello, which means, in my mind, that Tyler Johnson is actually Matt Zuccarello. He is that hobbit. That's why you never see them on the same rink.
Isn't it
a coincidence that the Rangers and the Tampa Bay Lightning are playing, and somehow there's no Matt Zuccarello coincidence? I think not.
But here's
the story that I want. Here's the one. The one little question that I have of, you know, inspirational stories like Tyler Johnson. And some of them are, you know, fantastic. Barclay Goodrow for the San Jose Sharks is another one, playing North Bay with Stan Butler's squad and catching on with the San Jose Sharks as a free agent. I wonder how much damage stories like Tyler Johnson's are actively doing to players right now that should really give up chasing their dream. Like for everyone that gets through, there'll be a few guys that look at it and say, oh yeah, man, look what Tyler Johnson's doing. If I just hang on, as opposed to making the decision to start your real life now and get out of the pretend life of a hockey player.
So essentially,
that part kind of gets glossed over.
Essentially, Tyler Johnson is like American Idol. It's like something that gives you the false hope that if anyone can get voted into being the new celebrity star, you know, I could too, even though I can't hit but three notes. And so Tyler Johnson, having done this, you think is essentially the guy being upheld as the greatest example of fortitude he's a human pinball and keep following your dream. He literally said last night that I keep living the dream. You're saying that living the dream in this case is a bad thing because he's inspiring other midgets that can't play hockey to continue to try to play hockey.
Whenever I hear someone say I'm living the dream life, I always say to myself, what, does that mean you're in a coma? Yeah, at the same time, there's plenty of people that really shouldn't be doing this anymore. You know, and listen, this is not a slight at Tyler Johnson, amazing hockey player. It's all worked out right for him. But for every person that players like Tyler Johnson have influenced positively, because nature abhors a vacuum, as we've seen before, how many people did these stories affect negatively? Guys that just won't let it go, can't give it up, is going to play one more year of minor pro, you know, going to stretch it out for one more season in Europe, put off getting into a real life and leave the fantasy life of hockey. I don't know. Just another one to keep in the back of your mind. I'm just sort of throwing shade on this Chase Your Dreams
nonsense.
You're
definitely sure. I tried to write last night that I want to believe that Tyler Johnson is starting to become something more than this narrative. But the more like media that I do throughout the playoffs in cities that aren't like Tampa Bay or New York, it becomes pretty apparent that like if they make it to the Cup final, all we're going to hear is
Small in stature, big in heart. An undrafted player who plays well above his weight class. Blah, 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 blah. And by the way, you know who I feel really bad for the more we hear about that? Andrej Palat, who is an amazingly good hockey player and playing amazingly well on his line. And I think is just as good as Tyler Johnson and maybe better in some ways because I think he might have some Marian Hossa tendencies, this Palat. I think he could be like one of those great two-way wingers.
Talent's there. Yeah. No, I don't know that I see him in. I don't know that I see him in the Hossa conversation yet. But
I meant Marcel.
Oh, Marcel Hossa. Yeah, oh, okay. Sorry. Oh, for sure, going away, Marcel Hossa.
Stamkos.
Oh
made
man,
a good...
this guy could be another Dion. Marcel Dion. Well, no, Gilbert Dion. This guy's another Gretzky. Brent Gretzky.
Stamkos made a good point last night, though, where he said that, you know, Palat and Johnson as a duo is something that we see a lot in this league. Coaches typically build lines around duos. But the chemistry of three players being as off the charts as they are with those two and Kucherov is something you don't often see. And Stamkos said it might be the best line he's ever seen as far as three guys clicking.
It's pretty impressive when they start to move the puck. Although I think it's funny, coming out of the lockout in 2005, I try to sort of couch everything with this idea now that we've been living with this rules package for, you know, going back to 2005. Okay, so it's been quite some time. The point that I've been making lately about Connor McDavid, as I do this in a roundabout way, is that he's the player that didn't have to adjust his game to the rules. He's the player that grew up in these rules. Like, we've been waiting for a superstar, right, to emerge from this rules package. And Connor McDavid is the first one. There will be others. I don't know if they'll be as good as McDavid, but he is the first one. But up until however long ago, players have always had to change their games, rethink the game, relearn the game, as opposed to just be born in it and, well, this is the way hockey is played. I don't need to change anything. My instincts are the instincts based on the rules that have been set in front of me, and that's how I play. And we're starting to see that now in totality with players, where once upon a time you had a lot of players that had to break their game and remake it, and maybe that's why duos were more pervasive, because it's harder to get three, obviously harder to get three people used to playing in this rules package than it is two. Maybe salary cap's a consideration. You just can't afford to have three people at that level all on the same line. I don't know. But at the end of it, this is a long-winded way of saying, yeah, these guys play like freaks together. And it harkens back to the old days where you didn't have pairs. You had actual lines. You had three guys, and everybody knew what everybody else was doing.
I don't know how much you gleaned from that game, too, last night. It's a really good win for them, and I know that there was a monkey off their back, though, as far as really breaking out against the Rangers. But, yeah, I mean, dude, like, you know, three of six on the power play, the Rangers 2 of 5, a shorty scored by Johnson, too. It was
You should love this because hasn't your whole point about juicing scoring been about, like, you know, put more of a premium on the power play?
Oh, I do.
Make sure the power plays turn into goals more than often.
Yeah, but my ideal, of course, is the two minute major. Like, that's the thing I want to see.
So go back to the pre-Montreal days.
Completely.
Where if you took a penalty against Montreal, that was it. They had 2 minutes to go to work and the game was over.
We can talk about this more in the summer because I really do want to flesh out this idea. But I think there's at least 75 reasons why we should go back to the two-minute major. It would juice scoring. It would put a premium on talent. I mean, all that. Like, if your whole thing with the shootout is like, let's put the spotlight on the really good players. Having Ovechkin in near the half boards just firing away and scoring 3 goals in 2 minutes. Come on now.
Okay, hang on a second. Okay, while we're spitballing these ideas, how about this one? And I'm about to terrify a lot of people here who love the presence of these things but can't really explain why. Let's just get rid of the lines altogether.
No, I mean, what about order?
Because staying on side is exciting.
Without order, we descend into chaos.
Ah, but isn't that part of the allure of hockey?
And soon
I've always maintained that's the chaos that creates the beauty.
Yep, and soon we're rationing water and we're locking up women in vaults like in Mad Max. I mean, that's what happens when you get rid of all the lines.
If we get rid of the blue lines and the center line, just have a couple of dots for face-offs, and that's it. Yeah. Wow. Okay.
By the way,
if you want to, this idea of we need to find more ice out there, you can if you take away the lines. Offensive zone, everything's a defensive zone.
I refuse to do that, but I'll meet you a little bit halfway, which is that I've often thought that 4-on-4 overtime should be played without offsides, like a video game. Just shut off offsides
just
like you do on a video game.
Yeah, just go for it.
Yeah, sure. Just go for it. Or 3-on-3 should be this. Like, why the hell would you have offside in a 3-on-3? Okay, who cares, right? It's already this.
You know what's funny? I was talking to one guy at the gym who plays in the American League. I said, what was 3-on-3 like this year? And he said, oh, first of all, the guys had a ball and everyone on the bench is laughing and howling. It's like, it's one of the coolest things they've ever been part of. And I said, can you coach it? And he said, no. And that's what we love about it. Like, at a certain point, the coach just has to put three guys out there. He said, the closest thing to coaching is what his team found most effective was, and I would have thought the opposite, is two defensemen and a forward. And you just play spring for breakaway. But he said we had more success with 2D. And one. I would have thought the other way around. Two forwards
and a defenseman. Yeah, because the setup that we all think is like, oh, you throw Backstrom and Ovechkin and Carlson back there, and have it be that
exactly.
setup. Yeah,
no,
that's interesting.
No, throw Carlson and Niskanen back there with
so,
Backstrom.
So the 2D are always back. Because essentially you have a 3-on-2 all the time, and then you have the forward kind of play up in the zone and cherry pick.
You're looking to spring breakaway.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Everybody's got the 3-on-3 boner right now after that story.
They're all ready for it. I know. I got to wear a dark suit when I talk about 3-on-3 now, because just the idea of it and hearing players talk about it and just sort of visualizing that chaos for however many minutes it is, 3 minutes or 4 minutes, is boffo to me. So, yeah, let me know when we're going to have that conversation. I'm wearing a pair of dark pants.
Great hockey moment but last night, by the way, in that Lightning-Rangers. Two great hockey moments that you might have missed. First off, the first goal Johnson scored, it was the rarest of rare 5-on-3 penalty kill breakaway, and he had Alex, I know, right?
Right?
He had Alex Killorn behind him, right? And they're like a choo-choo train going down the ice here. So he's in front of Killorn, and he says, Johnson said this after the game, the entire way I kind of yelled drop pass to Alex, but he was yelling, no, no, no. So I'm glad he was talking on it. So here's Johnson trying to say, I'm going to drop it to you. And Killorn's just like, don't. Idiot, go score a goal.
Any coach will tell you there's two places you should never make a drop pass. One is at home and one is on the road. and two, really don't make a drop pass if you're in an offensive situation and you're killing off a 5-on-3. Because drop passes turn into odd man rushes the other way. Like, what type of instinct is that? Call for a drop pass. That you're going to drop it. You're killing a 5-on-3.
It's super dumb.
Smokes.
And then the other great moment that some people thought this was a different thing than what it was last night. So end of the second period, Stamkos skates over to where the Rangers are leaving the ice and starts like making a ruckus. And people thought it was because Tanner Glass had hit him late. It was actually because Stamkos lost his stick on the play and Derek Brassard stole his stick. Just picked it right off the ice and started walking off the ice with Stamkos' stick. And Stamkos and the referee had to skate over and reacquire his stick from Derek Brassard.
Oh, no way. I missed that part.
That was fun. Yeah.
That's like the Bobby Ryan Mikko Koivu incident that we saw in that Minnesota Anaheim game. Did I ever tell you the Ken Baumgartner story with sticks? Have I mentioned that on this podcast? I wanted to get this one out.
You have.
Funny, I want to get this stick story on the podcast while still relatively fresh in my brain. Todd Warner told me this when we were sitting around having a beer after one of the junior games. Mm. And Ken Baumgartner, who we really should have on the podcast, really fascinating guy. When he played, anyone that can remember him, he was he was like a balls out fighter. Like he was not interested in blocking a punch. You remember Bomber, right? He just had the crazy hair, the Joe Fahel helmet, and he just threw punches. Now, before every game, he would get there early and he would have four hockey sticks and no one could touch them. And he'd take hours, shaving them and taping them and getting them all ready for the game. And then he'd stick handle with a hockey ball. And And the guys would be like, what the hell is Bomber doing? Like, he's going out there to fight, but his idea was, you know, just in case I'm in a situation, I'm going to score, I'm going to get a goal. He thought of himself as an offensive hockey player. So, as the story goes, one day, Doug Gilmore walks in. This is like in the height of the Maple Leafs powers in the early 90s. Gilmore walks in, grabs a Sharpie, and signs his name on the stick. And Baumgartner's like, don't touch my sticks. And he's like, well, what are you doing? He goes, I'm getting them, you know, I'm ready and I'm practicing with my sticks and making it. He's like, you're going out there to fight. I'm just making sure your stick is worth something one day. You can maybe sell it. So it became a thing that every day when the Maple Leafs would come into the room, they'd all grab a Sharpie and they'd all sign Ken Baumgartner's stick.
Wow.
Yeah, here I'm. But it's a total Gilmore, too. If you know the guy, it's the other person. Like, dude, I'm trying to help you out here. I'm trying to make these things worth something. I'm going to autograph them for you.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's a beautiful story.
Beautiful story,
sir. A little stick story for you. There you go.
All right. I know you got a boogie soon to start, like, getting all your crap together for stuff.
Today's like, yeah, I've got, tomorrow's a big day in the household because, young Brody, our 3-year-old, gets his tonsils out.
Wow.
Oh, I know. So I'm in the hospital the whole day with him, me and my wife. So our whole day is written off. And then I leave Thursday morning for Quebec for the, Memorial Cup. Today's like my only
and who's
thing
gonna
to get
be,
things done.
Who's playing for the Memorial Cup?
Well, there are 4 teams. As you know, the Quebec Ramparts are the host team. And then the other team from the queue will be the Rimouski Oceanic, who won in double overtime yesterday to win the QMJHL Championships. That is, of course, the President's Cup. The Oshawa, let's see, say it with me now, Greg, the Oshawa
Generals
won the OHL. They play for the J. Ross Robertson Cup. And the victors in the Western Hockey League, who win the Ed Chynoweth Cup, are the Kelowna
Rockets.
You got it. Look at you.
Thank you.
Mr.
I know,
Junior Hockey
right?
Knowing guy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Thank you.
Pretty good. So the nice thing about the Memorial Cup this year, with all due respect to the Cinderella stories that are always out there in junior hockey, these are 4 powerhouses. Three teams that were consistently in the top 10 and one that just existed outside of the top 10 of the CHL all season long. Kelowna, Oshawa, who almost went wire to wire as the number 1 team in the country, Quebec, and Rimouski. So this one should be a fantastic tournament.
Couple things before we bid you adieu, and then we bring in Brian Hayward to talk about the Ducks series. Your thoughts about Todd McClellan, who will be announced as the coach today of the Edmonton Oilers, despite the Oilers inexplicably trying to keep things under wraps, despite it being reported everywhere that it's going to be Todd McClellan being named the head coach.
Pretty good month for Edmonton. Whether it's Bob Nicholson, whether it's Peter Chiarelli, whether it's Connor McDavid, and now Todd McClellan. That's the way to do business, right? You're in Edmonton right now, they're doing it big with big names and getting things done. So since 2009, how many times have we heard this coming out of Alberta? Okay, we're done. He's our coach. These kids can't afford to hear any more voices in the room. In 2009, right?
Yeah.
Pat Quinn, Tom Rennie, Ralph Kruger, Dallas Eakins, Todd Nelson. Now, Todd McClellan.
Yeah.
The question you always have is, how will he be judged? Like, what is his job in Edmonton? And I still don't think that the accent is on winning hockey games there. I still think the accent is, are these kids getting better?
Can he
and
make them
if
better?
You look at his, well, did he make Logan Couture a better hockey player? I'd say yeah. The guy coming out of junior whose knock on him was skating and, the concussion history is going to keep him down made Logan Couture a better hockey player. Did he make Joe Pavelski a better hockey player?
Yep.
Sure did. Did he make someone like Brent Burns a better hockey player? Yep. Sure did. So the track record of making youngish players better is there.
Mm-hmm.
For Todd McClellan. What a dream scenario for him.
Yep.
To walk in and be the first guy to drive the Ferrari that is Connor McDavid.
Yeah.
Here's the keys, Todd.
Let me jump out of this plane. Oh, a golden parachute. Whee!
but the big headline out of all of it is this reunites Todd McClellan and Drew Remenda. Drew, now analyst for the Oilers on Rogers Sportsnet, and now Todd, the head coach.
And it also is a situation as well where, you know, the structure that he plays, and it's sort of Babcockian, he's a disciple of Mike Babcock.
He is.
I think could help kind of cover up some of the deficiencies that they have in that lineup, at least in, you know, temporarily. You're going to have to up. You need personnel. You need players. You need players in that blue line. But at least the structure that he plays and the system that he plays, I think, is pretty is pretty good insofar as that goes. And then your thoughts on game two of the Ducks and Blackhawks series tonight. Kyle Komisky in for the end of David Rundblad. Listen, those guys are getting like what 6 or 7 minutes a night anyway on the third pairing. What do you think happens in this one? You think the Blackhawks bounce back, sir?
Oh, I mean, it's not as if they haven't been there before. When you talk about the Blackhawks, and this is the weird thing about Chicago at this point in this team's evolution, isn't it hard not to just fall back on cliches when you talk about Chicago? And I always try to stop myself because I hate it when I do it. But inevitably, you come back to they've all been there before, man for man, most talented team in the NHL, know how to win, face that. Like, all the cliches apply to Chicago from what we've seen since they reactualized as a good team. So wouldn't shock me at all if they jump back into this one. But, man, does Anaheim look scary. Like, it's one thing to go through Winnipeg the way they did. Wow, that was impressive. Ditto against the Calgary Flames. And we had the questions. Well, okay, with all due respect, it was Winnipeg and Calgary, two teams that just about everybody had on the outside looking in at the beginning of the season. Now, all of a sudden, let's see what you can do against Chicago. Game one, they were a buzzsaw. And front and center, well, that third line is awesome, too. But front and center for me was Ryan Kessler, taking the pressure off that first line. And I didn't think we were going to see that Kessler that we saw in 2-11 against San Jose and Nashville. But holy smokes, is he ever close to being that guy again?
Yeah. And again,
what do you think?
I think the value of having two really good centers in the Western Conference is something that we're seeing now. I mean, it's not just depth, it's depth in the right place. And the idea that you can counter a Kane line and a Taves line with a Getzlaff line and a Kessler line is invaluable. Really physical in game one. I think the interesting,
if it stays physical, advantage Anaheim.
Sure. I think the real, and we'll talk about this with Hayward in a second, I think the real key to game two is they've got to try to make Freddie Anderson work a little harder. Now, he had some good saves, played well in game one, but just a couple more crease crashing moments, some rebounds that maybe they don't allow him to gobble up or get swept out of harm's way. I felt like Chicago could go to the net a little bit better, but again, as we've talked about in the playoffs, easier said than done.
So what you're saying is bump the goalie.
I'm saying
throw your hip into the pinball machine here until it's.
I'm saying
that's what you're saying.
I'm saying bump is a very sort of I don't know, like a Neanderthalic word. I would go. Oh. I would like to see him bickled.
I'd like to see him bickled. That's a great term. Bickled.
Just a little bickled. Right.
Trademark
tiny,
pickles.
That's tiny good. Bit of pickling.
Yeah. Hey, nothing wrong. Nothing wrong with nudging netminders. Of course, you know, our next guest here might not like that so much, but nonetheless.
Why would he? Really? All right. Anything else you want to add before you head off into the ether?
No. Did the by the way, for those wondering, Ted Nolan has interviewed in the Western Hockey League with the Vancouver Giants.
Makes so you happy.
For those of you wondering, I think he'll be. I think he does end up back in junior hockey, to be honest with you, and that's fine. He's been really successful, whether it's in the O or the Q. The Vancouver Giants have interviewed Ted Nolan, so don't be surprised if he lands somewhere this summer, maybe early, with a team in the CHL.
Now, is that team trying to lose on purpose? Because that's really what he's good at.
No. Because they loaded up on their superstar Tyler Benson from a couple of years ago. That's a team that's looking to be gooder next year.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Merrick, we'll talk to you soon, sir. Enjoy.
Buzz me tomorrow from the hospital. I'll give you
enjoying a tonsils.
Yeah, I know.
I have mine.
I have mine too. This is a lot of pop. Although, you know what? If it meant that it would give me a deeper voice, I'd have them out voluntarily. But I don't think they'd do.
Is that a thing that happens? I didn't even know.
No, I don't think so. I don't know what you can do other than like drink whiskey and eat cigars like Tom Waits to get a raspier, deeper voice. I'm stuck with this like King Ad-Rock, Beastie Boys, nasally
voice.
Yeah,
I know. I somehow end up with the deeper voice in this podcast.
I know, it's
that.
True.
I don't even know how that happens.
I don't know. Well, you're more of a man. More of a man than I ever am.
Much more of a man than you. In fact.
Here comes the hybrid Barney Gumble, Phil Esposito impression.
All right. We'll see you tomorrow.
All right, dude. Talk tomorrow, bud.
Join us down the line, replacing the great Jeff Merrick as someone else that's great. He's an analyst, color analyst for the Anaheim Ducks. He's Brian Hayward, and he joins us now. Hey, what's up, Brian? How are you?
Life is pretty darn good, I have to say.
I have to imagine that's the case. So game two of this series is tonight. We were just talking about the keys to the game, and one of the keys that we talked about was, do the Blackhawks have to make life a little bit more difficult for Freddie Anderson?
Well, I know that Joe Quenneville has talked about that, more of a front net presence, as seems to be the term that everyone uses these days. But I actually thought they were pretty good in that regard in series number one. But you know, what happens some games is that rebounds don't find sticks. There were some rebounds. Anderson was sensational in the game. But any rebounds that he did leave lying around didn't find Chicago players. So I don't think it was because they didn't have guys in front of the net. I just think that sometimes it bounces off the goaltender and it doesn't find the guy in front of the net. And, you know, you play the odds and you hope that eventually it does find you. So I don't especially think that that's really their game, quite honestly. I mean, they're not the biggest team in the world. But they have an awful lot of skill and an awful lot of speed. I don't think smaller people getting traffic in front of Frederick Anderson will pose any problems for him just because he's so massive. You know, Bickle and guys like that is a little bit of a different story. But for the most part, I don't think that the Blackhawks is that kind of team.
Right, I feel you on that. And there might be some gamesmanship, too, going on there, too, with Quenneville. You never know. What did you think? What was the thing that impressed you the most in the Game 1 win from the Ducks side?
Well, I think from an Anaheim perspective that they won a game that they didn't play very well. And strangely enough, that's a good thing in the playoffs. It's a bad thing in the regular season for coaches, but in the playoffs, it flips and it becomes a good thing. You know, I thought that Getzlaff and Perry in particular showed rust after the layoff for the first time in the playoffs. And I'd be surprised if they weren't, you know, a much bigger factor in this game. The good news for Anaheim is that, you know, obviously the third line was very good. I thought Thompson was sensational. Palmieri played by far his best game, and they've been waiting a long time for Kyle Palmieri to have a good game. There's a lot of talk about him coming out of the lineup and being replaced by either Thomas Fleischman or by Yuri Sekach in the earlier playoff rounds. And Boudreau kind of stuck with him. And, you know, I thought Palmieri was very good in game three. So usually with Kyle, when he gets a good game under his belt, he goes on a little bit of a streak. And so the Ducks are hoping that that's going to be the case.
I think a lot of us thought we would see a lot of the Taves line against Getzlaff and Perry. But it was more Kessler versus Taves, I think, in game one than maybe a lot of us thought. Is that just the matchup that Boudreau wants?
Yeah. Ryan Kessler is the guy that, first of all, there's a history there between Ryan Kessler and Jonathan Taves. When Kessler was with Vancouver, I'm told that there were some pretty epic battles and that they're really rough on one another. But the Ducks feel that if they can take care of Taves and Kane, they'll happily take chances with the rest of the Hawks lineup. And so the matchup in Anaheim, where the Ducks control most of them, is going to be Kessler against Taves. And the only opportunity that Quenneville's going to have here is, of course, on icings and things like that where he can change it. But I expect that once this series shifts back to Chicago, that Quenneville will try and get John Taves away from Ryan Kessler.
Yeah, for sure. Freddie Anderson's an interesting story. His numbers at home are ridiculous. Tell us a bit about where you think his game is these days, and is this the kind of guy that can steal games for you in the playoffs?
Well, some people think he stole game one. I think with Freddie, he's the perfect kind of goaltender for the Ducks because frankly, I don't think their goalies need to steal them a lot of games for them to win series. I think they're that good, and I think they're deeper than virtually everyone else. So if he's solid, which he has been rock solid throughout the playoffs, he gives them everything that they need. And, you know, stylistically, that's the way Freddie Anderson is built. He's a massive human being. A lot of people don't realize that, you know, he's over 235 pounds. And so he fills a lot of net. And unlike a lot of other goaltenders, it's just not equipment filling the net. It's actually body that's plugging up the holes. And so, and the way that Dwayne Roloson has kind of developed him from last year to this year is just to kind of build on a lot of fundamental work where pucks aren't going through him, because he is so darn big. There's really not a lot of net to see if he's in the right spot. So He's a very consistent goaltender, and he's kind of stepping into the limelight, I think, for the rest of the league. But what he's doing in the playoffs really isn't a surprise for the Ducks, because he's done it pretty much all season long.
Were you at all concerned about the Ducks having gone through the Flames and Jets in series that maybe it wasn't the toughest path to the Western Conference final, let's say? Were you concerned at all about them playing those series and then stepping into the ring with a team like the Blackhawks?
Yeah, actually, I laugh at that. If you go back to the opening round, the Winnipeg Jets might have been the hottest team in the West, along with Minnesota. Those two teams were the teams that everybody said, boy, we don't want to face those guys, because they're on fire and they're battle tested and they had to win every game just to get in to the postseason. It was kind of a sexy pick for a lot of people, especially in Canada, to pick the Jets to beat the Ducks. And I just think that Anaheim is that good, and that most people don't realize how good they are. I think, as I mentioned before, I think they're deeper in the forward position than any team in the league. And I think they're deeper on the blue line. I mean, right now we've got James Wisniewski as their number seven. He can't get into the lineup because the defense is playing that well. And think about Chicago and the issue that they have on the blue line right now with depth. Where would James Wisniewski rank on their depth chart? At worst, he's number five. He might even be number four ahead of Tommy Oduya. So, you know, that's how good this team is. They're a very well-assembled team. The fact that they got through those first rounds in short order only benefits them, because they're healthy. They're 100% healthy, and those depth players are waiting to get in the lineup. And I think they're thrilled that they were able to dispatch the Jets and the Flames the way that they were able to. It's not to say that they had an easy touch, because most people would tell you that Winnipeg is going to be a force to be reckoned with in the future.
Yeah, for sure. Finally, for me, I mean, the Bruce Boudreau factor in this series is a lot of people maybe pulling for the Ducks a little bit. I think we all want to see this guy thrive and succeed and get his chance to play for a cup. What's been your interactions with him? What do you think he's done for this roster?
Well, first of all, when you're a broadcaster and Bruce Boudreau is your head coach, he makes your job pretty easy, because he is the most approachable head coach certainly I've ever come across in my career. And I think I've had a dozen or so of them here in Anaheim, and he's very easy to work with for us. And so there are a lot of people pulling for him just based on that. He's a good guy. He really is a hockey lifer. I think he's very underrated in terms of what he sees on the ice. I mean, you can sit down with Bruce after a game, and he has seen everything that I've seen, and much more. And he's a guy that really, really gets to know his players on not only the basis of them as hockey players, but on a personal level. And I think it gives him a good read on any given night, who's going and who's not going, and what adjustments he feels he needs to make. And he is a guy that makes adjustments. I mean, it's unusual because of the run that the Ducks are on, that the lines have been kept together for the most part. They've been pretty consistent from day one, because there's no question that Bruce is a tinkerer, but the players really haven't given him the opportunity to make many changes. They've been that good.
Great point. Brian, great insight, sir. We'll enjoy watching game two, and we'll talk to you down the line.
Okay. Take care.
Brian Hayward. Did you know that he won a share of the Jennings Trophy once? It's true. Duckies tonight, you know, I really like their physical play in game one. I think the concerns about the Blackhawks' third pairing on defense, like I said, man, like I feel like you can get through this series overplaying Keith Seabrook, Oduya, and Yarmolson to compensate for that lack of a quality third pairing, but I think it really comes back to haunt you in the next round. Quenville's a guy who makes great adjustments, and I think they're going to need some after a pretty it wasn't an emphatic loss. I mean, their possession numbers in the first game were pretty good, but I thought the Ducks definitely had maybe the better of the overall play. So it should be a fun one tonight. I don't think that anybody thinks for a second that if the Ducks go up 2-0 in the series that we can write off the Hawks with the next two in Chicago. But it's going to be interesting. When you hear Hayward kind of put it all together as far as the depth of this team and as far as, you know, what they have beyond Getzlaf, Perry, what Kessler gives them, the defense, as he said, you know, a guy that they picked up at the trade deadline can't even crack the lineup. It's pretty impressive, and it kind of speaks to what a lot of people didn't think they'd have, because they've hadn't had in the past, which is quality depth. So there you go. Not an easy series for the Blackhawks to win. And some people last night at the Ranger game already thinking about the logistics of what it would be like to fly from Tampa Bay to Anaheim for a cup final. It's a bit of hubris on their part, I think. I think the Rangers are going to be heard from again in this series in a game that didn't have 8,000 penalty calls. All right, that's a show. Somewhat short, somewhat sweet. Thanks to Brian Hayward. Thanks to Merrick for carving out some time. And we'll talk to you down the line, hopefully tomorrow. Don't forget, Todd McClellan, presser at 4 Eastern time from Edmonton. It should be a really interesting and fun one as we play. Will he at any point flip the dais over and just start doing a jig because he's so happy to coach Connor McDavid? Or actually, they know, fun drinking games. See how many times they mention Connor McDavid. Who knows? Maybe they keep that on the down low. Maybe they're all like, well, you know, if the draft goes the way we think it should. Who knows? They're kind of dicks that way. And then the Babs watch will allegedly come to an end tomorrow, which will be a lot of fun. Again, Bob McKenzie thinks it's Detroit. Would not be surprised to see Buffalo pull it out. Andy Strickland tweeted something that said, word out of Detroit, Babcock to St. Louis Blues has simmered significantly. When it says simmered, does that mean the heat's been turned down? Ruby shakes her head, yes, that means the heat's been turned down. So maybe the heat... I didn't even know it was boiling. I didn't even see bubbles in the pot. Let alone, it's now at a simmer. Was it? Did they turn the oven on? Did they turn the stove on for that one? Simmer down now. All right, there's that. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye.